I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Previously on Chaotic Normal, the crew of Melora's Borealis sailed through the Farvale Islands in search of a druid grove on the Azure Stand. A druid grove that everyone says is cursed and dooms anyone who enters. In order to find more information, the crew sailed to a Empire camp known as Camp Vengeance. There, they discovered that the camp was in total disarray. They had abandoned a former camp known as Camp Righteous after it had been taken over by the undead. They decided to take a visit to this Camp Righteous because an adventurer known as Darwin Nash had sailed there to learn more about an Ancient One temple, and if anyone knows anything about Ancient One ruins or cursed druid groves, it would be this adventurer. The crew sailed down the river aboard the Naughty Dreams and encountered an undead aboard the canoe. They fought the zombie as well as a shark, and now find themselves at the entrance to Camp Righteous, the abandoned camp. Will the crew find the adventurer they seek, or will they find only the undead and other cursed treasures? Let us find out on Chaotic Normal, The Shattered Isles.
Come upon an abandoned riverside camp strewn with wreckage. The tents are moldy and tattered, and all the permanent structures appear to have burned to the ground. Two intact rowboats are tied off to a short dock built into the beach. And north of the camp is a ridge, draped with vines and hanging with great jungled trees. But built into this ridge is an 80-foot-tall stone statue carved to look like a man with a crocodile on his back. Between the statue's feet is a stone archway leading to a dark tunnel. To the left of the statue is a crude animal pen with a small panicked bird running around inside it. Other than the small panicked bird, there are no signs of life here. What do you do? You're in the Naughty Dreams. You're just offshore, looking up at the waste of Camp Righteous, broken tents, moldering and rotting, jungle strewn and overgrown. It's clear that the nature chose to retake much of this camp as soon as it was gone. There's no signs of movement. There's not even signs of corpses or anything. Just an abandoned, rotten camp consumed by nature.
I watch out for sharks.
You see no signs of sharks.
I mean, knowing us, it's always good to keep an eye out for them. They seem to be following us.
To be fair, they could just be invisible.
Okay, oh, don't even... That's what I do. They can't learn from me.
I take my clothes off and wring them out, dry them a little bit.
You dry out your salty clothes. Now they're salty and damp instead of wet and salty. It's a slight upgrade.
Ah, that's perfect.
All right. I think bring us in to shore as quietly as possible and keep an eye out for any other signs of Darwin Nash. He came through here at one point, so it would seem there might be any signs of him, any footprints, any another boat that may be docked somewhere.
Yeah, there are two other rowboats tied to the dock.
Okay, yeah, let's maybe not go to the dock. Maybe pull it up.
Oh, we were racing, remember? I'm there already. I won.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's true. Park over here. You're in one of the canoes. You see that the other two boats... You see the other two rowboats are very similar to the canoe that you've captured, suggesting they all came from the same location.
Are there any signs of a like trap that's kind of sticking out?
What do you mean by signs of a trap?
Oh, like any like netting on the ground that we might step on or like a pit.
You can't really make out any details from the river.
While I'm waiting for them to come in, can I start snooping around in the canoes?
So you've landed. Did you tie up to the dock, or are you? Did you run up to the beach? Basically,
while racing, I went wherever is closest. So if I saw the docks first, maybe I went there.
Yeah, and looking at it, you see that basically, like there's maybe only a 15-foot across landing space here with a 10-foot long wooden dock. It's a pretty steep slope leading up to the island itself, and you can tell that at high tide, there's probably no beach whatsoever on this part of the island. So it's not what I'm saying, dock. It's not some grand, huge thing. It is a 5-foot by 10-foot area of wood.
So if it's jutting out, you know, 5 feet or 10 feet, I would assume that I would land there because it's quicker to win grog.
All right, yeah, you've lashed to that and climbed out onto it. You're snooping through the canoes. Make an investigation as you're rifling through there. The rest come rowing up and see Phil already in there. Celeste, you're trying to see if there's any signs of danger here, and it's really hard to tell. Though the Imperials had clear-cut this area when they set their camp, the area surrounding it is still dense jungle, and it seems as if the jungle has almost out of spite, grown inwards towards this open space. And so the canopy is gradually shutting out and smothering away the light that reaches down into the forest floor. And then because it has been several months of growth, and it is not sand in this area, it's made it to where the ground is basically dense with foliage and vines and all new growth that's all low to the ground and really making it very easy to hide anything in the foot deep foliage.
Got a 22 on the rowboat investigation.
Yeah, rifling through the boats, you find that these boats don't look like they've suffered much wear and tear. They're clearly newer or at least well cared for, so they definitely haven't been abandoned here for a while. In fact, inspecting the knots, you can tell that the rope used to tie them is relatively fresh. However, looking through them, the boats do seem to have been picked over pretty cleanly. As you're rifling through it, you got a high enough that you notice there's like deep score marks along one side of the boat. It looked to be like gouges as if something was stabbed in there or not. Go ahead and make a perception check or just intelligence check to see if you can identify what was stabbed into these.
Okay. It's a 19.
You can tell that it looks like some sort of short stone projectile had basically thudded in, likely like a stone arrowhead had stabbed into the side of one of these boats, but fallen out because it wasn't able to embed deep enough.
Can I look down in the water underneath? Is it clear enough since it's like somewhat stagnant to see if there's arrowheads?
Yeah. And mind you, you've gone north of the area that's stagnant. Yeah. There's the water's actually flowing here. But as you look down in the sandy bank, because the lower area here is sand, I'm saying the camp is all dirt. But as you're looking around in like the sandy bank there, your hands searching around, make a survival check to see if you can turn up anything. And as Phil is rifling through the sand and splashing around in the shallows, does the rest of the crew come in or do you stay off island?
Well, if Phil has made it there and has not been caught in any sort of nefarious trap, yeah, we'd probably pull up next to him.
Yeah, probably better to stick together.
11, and that's survival.
Yeah, bring us in, Zelnarn.
We're not captain on this one, though, so I can't say that.
Captain abandoned his ship. You row yourselves in and tie off at the dock, climbing onto the dock. And you see there's like a staircase leading up the steeply sloped beach leading up to the camp itself. Phil, what did you get on that survival?
It was 11.
11? You scrambling through don't seem to find anything.
Okay. In there. I look at the knots and I'm like, oh, they tied them wrong. And I tie like a worse knot.
All right. Looking around, you can see that. So as you kind of from the beach head surveil the remnants of this camp, there's sort of, one, two, three, 6 points of interest here. The first point of interest seems to be larger command tents. They look similar to the style of tents you saw the Imperials using for their the command HQ at the at Camp Vengeance, and same tent they were using as like a field hospital back in Camp Vengeance. So you see a pair of those command tents in amidst wreckage, and then you see that there is smaller, more uniform tents, also similar to what you saw at Camp Camp Vengeance. These are clearly soldier tents, and these seem to be in moldering ruins, although there might be something in there if you want to pick through them. In the distance, you notice that it looks like there is some sort of like on the southern side, just past the command tents, you see what looks like a small building that they had been making, like out of actual lumber instead of tents, that has collapsed and looks to be charred. And then there is what looks like an animal pen up by the base of this statue. And there is a small frantic bird rushing around in the animal pen, clearly in distress. And just beyond the animal pen is a pair of latrines. And then finally, of course, is the large statue that looks like a man with a crocodile on his shoulders that sits carved into the cliff face, with between its legs a yawning like opening leading into the statue itself.
Can I go check out the animal pen?
Yeah, you climb your way up the steps, passing by the command tents and the soldiers' tents, to head to the animal pen. You head towards the animal pen. You can tell it's clearly meant to keep pigs and goats and other livestock, although the any livestock and pigs are long gone from here, either taken by the Imperials when they fled, eaten by the undead, or devoured by the various beasts of the jungle. And speaking of beasts of the jungle, there is this small bird rushes frantically around in here. The creature, let me describe it for you. The creature looks kind of like a this one looks like a, it seems to have dark, kind of scattered fur, or like scattered down across pink skin. It's clearly a juvenile bird. However, there's some color burgeoning on its down, suggesting that when it's fully grown, it's supposed to have rich, vibrant tropical colors to it. But the telltale thing that gives away what kind of bird this creature is the fact that, one, despite being a fledgling, it sits maybe a foot and a half tall. And then, two, is the distinctive shape of its beak. The beak is sharp and protruding and wedges outwards, going both up and down, looking like the head of an axe. as you look at this juvenile axe beak in front of you, this juvenile bird in front of you, you recognize it as an axe beak, or I guess a fledgling axe beak. So not quite baby, but not ready enough to like flap and flutter.
Is there like signs of a mama bird nearby? Or like figuring out why this bird is distressed and alone as a baby?
Yeah, make a nature check. Or actually, animal handling, sorry. I always forget the animal handling is a skill.
Got 11.
You don't see, or you can tell that this thing's clearly distressed and in a panic. And you do know that its screeches could, or are very, or usually these axe beaks, when they screech in this way, it draws other axe beaks in the area into a very aggressive but very frenzied state. However, it's also rare that a beast like this is left unaccompanied, so it must have not been in here for long. So you don't see any signs that there are like parents or a mama bird nearby, but you can tell that it's screeching in panic, or that its current panic, if it escalates to screeching, is likely to draw axe beaks.
Is there a way I can like help it, or is it better to just like leave it?
Well, it seems to be stuck in the pen as you look at the enclosure. It looks like it somehow climbed into the enclosure, but because it is too young to fly, or even like hot flap, it can't get itself out. You could open the enclosure to let the thing go.
Yeah, I'll do that. Silly little bird, how'd you jump in here? You can't even jump.
You find the latch, and as you lift it, the wood's old and moldering and kind of sticks, but eventually you pull it open, pulling the gate open, and the creature looks at you as you're kind of standing in the open gate, and it looks, or it seems to stare you down for a minute as if wondering, should it charge you? Make an animal handling check.
12.
The little fledgling bird decides that it should, in fact, charge you. And it rushes towards you with a... And as it runs straight towards you with its little axe-like beak, it tries to slash into you for 12 to hit.
That's a miss.
You sidestep it, and the 2 points of slashing damage it would have dealt, it cuts in the air and then turns and runs off into the bushes, begging as it goes. You get inspiration for helping the little animal.
Yes.
Meanwhile, as Celeste is helping a baby or a fledgling axe beak out of this pen, what are the rest of you up to? There's the command tents. There's this ruined, burned out structure. There's latrines. There's soldier tents, and there is, of course, this large statue with the clear ruin, or like an abandoned shrine inside it.
Ruber is going to check out the command tents.
Phil's going to go use the latrines.
And Jules is going to check out the statue and see if she can remember any of the... I don't know, historical or religious significance here that might point in direction.
And Zeltnern was going to join Jules at the statues.
All right, so Zeltnern and Jules step off towards the large statue that's like 80 feet tall of the man with a crocodile on his back, or on his like shoulders. Meanwhile, Ruberi, you step off towards the command tents, and Phil, you go to use the latrines. We'll start with Ruber. Ruber, you step off towards the command tents. As you get closer and closer towards it, you can see that there's basically two large, like 20-foot across tents here, and then the ruins of where one was meant to be. It looks like, or as you pull open the first tent, it's clear it looks like everything of value from this tent was removed. At some point, likely by the Imperials when they came back to loot the scene of the disaster to scavenge what they could. But everything of value has been removed in here, at least at obvious first glance. Do you want to poke around inside it or no?
Yeah, I do want to poke around. Are there, like, what's left in here?
You see there's a bedroll in the corner and, like, just a few, like, pieces of, like, old gear kind of stacked around, but it's pretty clear like there's not anything good unless there was something missed, which would require an investigation to poke around.
Yeah, I'll start with like the bedroll, see if there's anything in the bedroll, under the bedroll, and then start checking the packs of stuff with an investigation of 8.
Rivera, as you're poking around, you at one point reach down for a bag, but you notice something coiled underneath it. Red touches yellow? I think that's the one that means you're a dead fellow.
Yeah, you're a dead fellow.
You pull your hand back, having gotten at least a 5 on the investigation, so you don't notice, or so you notice the poisonous snake hiding in the bag before you grab the bag. You leave that bag aside and kind of look at the other places and realize there's nothing in here. This has just become a little dark space for snakes to hide.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Do you wrangle up any of the poisonous snakes, or do you go and investigate the other command tent?
No, I'll leave the snakes. I'm not well-versed in animal handling, so I'll check out the other tent.
The other command tent seems in stark contrast to the first one, which was basically abandoned snake pit. This tent seems well used. There are 3 cots set up in it that look like it looks like one of them has been freshly used. There is a desk in the corner, like a strong wooden desk in the corner, covered in journals and sextants and other navigator's tools. You see that there is a bottle of ink that's been uncorked sitting on it and still isn't dried. And there's even a quill resting on the page. As you look around the scene, it immediately presents itself as an active field research tent. This has been used recently and is well maintained.
I'll check the current journal entry on the table. Also keeping a hand on my sword just in case danger approaches.
Sauntering over to the table, you look at the journal, flipping through a few pages of it. It becomes immediately clear that these are the exploration catalogs of Darwin Nash. The first page you open up, and as you're reading through it, reads, "My expedition aboard the Gilded Aristocrat set forth from Port Providence today. My contacts have informed me that my pupil started her journey in Las Islas de Arcanistas. Therefore, I've chosen to begin my expedition upon those islands as well. The sooner I can find Isabella, the sooner I can put an end to her ridiculous and dangerous idea of adventuring alone. I hope to find her on Castle Island soon to ensure I have her assistance for the important research projects to come. With my guides at hand, I traverse the jungles of Castle Island, hoping to find any sign of the ruined castle for which the island was named, and for any signs of my apprentice should she be here. The island has countless small caverns and sinkholes that could be easily used to hide men or goods. My scouts reported several goblin ambushes hiding in such places. Considering the proximity to Port Providence, it's likely that these caverns are being used to store smuggled goods. I've ordered my cartographer to duplicate the map of the caverns and provide it to the authorities of Port Providence." You see that there is a map sketched out below that when you look at it, it looks like it's a map of one of the Tres Arcanistas. You've explored one when you found the Sunless Citadel. But this is one of the other 2 islands, Castle Island, named for the supposed castle built on it, though no one ever sees that castle. Most notable of these caverns, the passage continues, is that which contains the castle itself. We finally found it after nearly an hour of tracking, and found that it is not tangled in the jungle atop the island, but rather has fallen into the very center of it. The castle is collapsed. Despite the reluctance of my team, I prepared a well-equipped expedition into these castle ruins, which I quickly confirmed are ruins of the Ancient Ones. I felt such joy at this confirmation, but to my utmost dismay, I discovered as well that goblin tribes have been nesting here for far too long. Any relics of the Ancient Ones have been destroyed with the ruins, and with them any information about the nature of those beings. The Vatiri goblins are a blight upon the Shattered Isles, and my anger for their disrespect for such artifacts knows no bounds. And bounds has been underlined 3 times. Once it became clear that the delve into the ruins was of no value, I called a halt to it and ordered everyone to return to the Gilded Aristocrat. I have no time nor resources to waste on sites that have already been ruined by goblins. We departed the island just after dark, but not before I drafted a letter to return to Port Providence informing the council of the goblin menace and strongly encouraging a force be sent to cure the island of their wretched presence. And it's this is dated about 4 months ago. You close that one looking for a newer one, as it seems like he was updating that. And you find another story about somewhere called Crane Island, an island dedicated to the worship of a kraken as a god. The cultists, according to Darwin Nash here, believe that the cult fanatic, one Denison Crane, who first landed on the island and for whom it's named, is teaching them to worship Melora. However, they believe he's teaching them to worship Melora in a pure and druidic way. However, they are being seduced to the island, sinking their ships as an offering to and live their life there. However, there are 10 members who have joined into this cult, with another 13 supposedly on the way. And it seems to be just detailing rumors that he has heard. You see a few more things like that, and it seems as if, as you're scanning through this, he is searching for Isabella de Ascar, his supposed pupil, and has been trying to follow rumors of where she is. Another story talks about Eyes Isle. Boy, that is an annoying name for me to write. EYESISLE. Eyes Isle.
I think Isle of Eyes might be better.
Eyes Isle! where it's apparently reported that it's a wild island where there's nothing but beasts that live. But it's said that the beasts are all devoted servants to Melora, and that they are the favored creatures of Melora, and that anyone who hunts anything there is punished by her. Worse, it's said that every beast on the island is blessed with true sight out to 120 feet. That's right, that means parrots, fish, vermin, and any other animal native to the island can see through invisibility and illusions. That matters pretty much not at all to animals on an island, but it still exists.
Ooh, getting like a parrot, one of those as a pet, yeah, would be awesome though.
But he also says that there's apparently on Eyes Isle a giant ape of such incredible proportions that black alchemists out of Pesselind are building an expedition to try and capture.
It's not going to end well. They're going to take it to the big city, and it's going to steal pretty lady.
So as you flip through his books, having found, perhaps several leads there, one about a ruined castle in the Tres Arcanistas called on Castle Island, another about a Kraken cult on Crane Island, and about an island full of true sight bearing beasts with a giant ape that black alchemists are seeking on Eyes Isle. You finally flip to a current section where it's clear this is in fact.
Does the description of the Crane Isle sound like the Temple of Melora that we discovered?
It sounds very similar. Okay. The other one did not have the story of Warthal Keel was that it was a group of Kraken worshippers who turned away from the Kraken to worship Melora, and then the Kraken in its anger, Valstuge, crushed the city into the ocean. This seems to be an inverse of that, of people who believe they're worshipping Melora, but are actually being tricked into being cultists of a Kraken. Though it does seem Crane Isle is located in the Mermaid Isles, so it's in the same area as Warthal Keel.
Weird. Okay.
sorry, the Merfolk Isles. But you reach finally a modern one, and you see that the current one, and it is clearly Darwin Nash describing his experience since landing here on at Camp Righteous. It is very clear as soon as you hop into it that he hasn't had a lot of time to properly journal. Right now it's just notes being written down. It details camp is a mess. Getting situated has been difficult. Worse, there's clear signs of goblin activity. Organized men to hold against goblins. Men won't go into the statue, but I need at least one of them with me to do it. It won't work without at least two of us. Men keep refusing, are afraid of the goblins. They think we should make camp elsewhere in the woods. I've told them that's foolish. If you go farther into the woods, the dead will find them, let alone the goblins. The goblins fear this place. They won't come here while we're present. Men have gone into the woods to try and make new shelter away from the statue. They are cowards. The men have not come back. Two of the men came back. They were dead. I've put one on a boat and sent it south. Hopefully someone at Camp Vengeance gets the message. And
what
that
message
seems
to, was he trying to send?
And it's clear that one was written this morning.
Okay, good to know.
Meanwhile, Jules and Zelnern, you've made it to the base of the statue. You see that it's basically there is with great, or you see this cliff face is draped with heavy vines, thick as your arm, that fall across this statue, basically submerging it and shielding it. They flail out towards you, and again, you are in bright sunlight. But the canopy around seems to be looming over as if desperately trying to close in, to shut this place away from the visibility of the sun, as if to hide this place from Melora. And as you look up at the statue, you see that each foot is easily 10 feet across by 15 to 20 feet deep. The legs are massive, thick columns that go up, carved not crudely, but they're not, it's not an expert carving. It's basically a smooth shape of what a leg would be. Carving up to knee joints that arch back to the shape of a man, not quite sitting, but in a hunched over, painful squatting position with a great crocodile borne on his shoulders and its head resting on top of his head, which is pushed and hunched down. The immediate appearance of this it almost looks like a man with a serpent's head at first note. But then as you note, like, oh no, there's carved beneath that crocodile's head is a human head. You realize it is a crocodile creature crushing down on a human man. You look at this statue, and I'll let you make history checks to see if the two of you make history checks to see if you know anything about this magnificent statue that clearly has an arched doorway between its legs.
That's pretty impressive if you haven't seen as much dwarven architecture as I have.
I've got a 21.
Crit.
Nice.
Wow. You both look at it, and as you kind of like piece parts together, and it's finally once you see that it's not a serpent-headed man, it is a man carrying a crocodile on its back. That you both recall a story that's often told or said to be a tale from the Ancient Ones themselves. In the early days of the world, man stood by the banks of a river, frightened. Crocodile raised his head from the water and asked, "What troubles you, cousin man?" Man said, "I must cross this river, but I fear to enter the water alone, because it teems with your brethren." Crocodile replied, "It's true, you would not be safe, but I will carry you across the river safely on my back if you promise only to return the favor." Man agreed, and Crocodile bore him safely across the water. When they reached the far bank, man asked, "How can I repay you?" Crocodile replied, I wish to see the realm of humans, but I fear to go there alone, because it teems with your brethren. You must carry me on your back across your realm. Man had been tricked, but a promise is a promise. So he carried Crocodile safely on his back across the entire realm of humans, a journey that lasted many years. He also swore, in his anger, that never again would men and crocodiles be friends, and so it has remained to this day. The tale being a story that's said to be attributed to the ancient ones in the area, clearly is an effort to explain why crocodiles and men typically don't like each other.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's probably it.
Do you do anything with that information?
I'm not totally clear where to go with that one.
You asked if there was historical significance to it, and there indeed is.
Well, let's go inside, I guess. You want to go in? Should we listen?
We should be. You know, I used to be a little more cavalier about this sort of thing, but these days I like to keep my eyes about me before going into these types of structures. Are there any traps I can see? There seem to be any sort of...
Well, I'm going to let you guys know this. I'm never going to answer yes to the question, are there any traps I can see? You can tell me how you're attempting to investigate for traps, and I will... That can reveal things, but...
Okay, I will... Well, here's the thing. So Jules knows a lot more about medieval traps than I do. Which is a bit of a trick. Jules investigates the entrance for various types of traps, like tripwires and pressure plates, and like golden statues that are a very particular weight that you'd maybe need a bag of properly weighed sand to counterbalance, that kind of thing.
There's 7 of those.
Shit.
So what you see basically from where you're standing at the foot of the dais is there's a 5-foot staircase leading up to a platform. That platform is a smooth stone platform leading up into, like, carved smooth stone leading until it reaches the cliff itself, where it kind of blends into the cliff that it's carved out of. It's upon this platform that there's these 2 massive stone feet with these great pillar-like legs stretching up. And it's between those 2 pillar-like legs that there's basically a 10-foot corridor created that disappears deep into darkness behind the statue, or within the statue, clearly disappearing into a cavern within the cliff. However, as you gaze down into it, it is pure blackness inside. Do either of you have dark vision, low light vision, anything like that?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
I'll get a torch.
Zolnir, in striking a torch, the light glows out in, and you can see that the entrance to this tunnel, basically, this passage into this between the legs, it's clearly strewn with the common detritus of nature. Leaves, dirt, small animal bones, various things scattered and tucked away within here. But there's no, there's no, like, so basically the ground is dirty and covered and scattered with litter, making it to where something could be hidden in there if you, maybe. The vines drape with vines and are thick with lichen across the weathered stone. However, about 10 feet in, or about 15 feet past the beginning of the feet, so 10, 15 feet into this passage, you see that there is tattered old cloth worn away by time, but still kind of obscuring view beyond about 15 feet in.
Do you want to go first?
Does that robe of the patches have the standard ones as well as random ones, or are they all random?
All random.
Okay.
So the patches, when you look at them, have nothing on them until you roll them.
Got it. A little hard to know when to use that. Well, I reach out with my mage hand and I push on the ground in the entrance with the maximum weight I can.
All right, your mage hand presses at the ground, and it presses against the hard stone. It's clearly been chiseled and cut and scraped meticulously with old tools. This is not the work of great magic, nor the work of modern, technology, you know, like hoes and wet saws and stuff. What's the word? Lathes. This has clearly been smoothed out painstakingly, almost devotedly with chisels. And as your mage hand scrapes against it, kind of scatters the detritus on the ground, but it doesn't seem as if there's anything going on in this first, 15 feet before the tattered cloth in front.
All right. Well, at a certain point, our bravery will have to guide us, Zelnern. I'm ready if you are.
Let's do this. You go first.
Okay, I'll go first. Actually, wait, before we go in...
Alright, let's hold off a second.
No, I'll spend a few minutes casting... You know, we gotta do everything in its proper time, right, Zelnern? I'll spend a few minutes casting Detect Magic as a ritual.
So as you're casting Detect Magic, and this is at the same time that... Celeste has just let the axe beak out and dodged away from it as it makes its guffaw noises. Robert is reading through the journals of Darwin Nash, skimming them. We cut to Phil, who has gone to take a shit. which inspiration for that. you've stepped up to the latrines, you've gone inside one of them. Fortunately for you, despite being a tropical wooden outhouse in the jungle that's been abandoned for 5 months, it isn't too horrendous inside. As you set yourself down upon the toilet seat there, to use it, the wooden bench, you can't help but realize that there is something. While your latrine seems to be relatively fine, there is a smell coming through. Not a shit smell, but a rotting, death-like smell.
Okay.
And,
they really put this thing to work. My pants are around my ankles at this point. I'm looking around for reading material. Do I see anything?
You actually do find a old, worn copy of a... it's, clearly been rolled up, but it's a copy of what looks like the... it's called the Iron Testament. Looking at it, though, it is written entirely in Infernal, and it is clearly the holy text of the priests of the Ecclesiarchy of the Empire.
Okay. Can I look to, the side of the stall? Has anyone carved anything into it, maybe? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I pull out my knife and start to write, Phil was here.
Yeah, and as you're scratching and Phil was here, you see one that says, the Commandant sucks. And another one that says, dis will come for all of us. You see another one that says, dead or walking, dead or walking. And then beneath that it says, yeah, no, that's just you. And then another one says, that's not nice. He's trying to, there's basically chat room arguments going on in here. But nothing seems to betray much information.
Commandant makes a gold, I make a copper. That's why I shit on Empire time.
I tear out a page out of the Ecclesiarchy Bible and wipe my ass with it.
You do that and die. No, you do that and as it hits below, you hear a coming from the latrine hole.
Oh, God. I immediately just shoot up with my pants around my ankles and turn around.
You look down into the latrine hole, and I shit you not. You see that during the attack on the camp, clearly one of the Imperial men had their courage fail them, and hoping to hide from the undead hordes, he must have hid himself from the undead by climbing down into this latrine. He survived the attack, but clearly couldn't climb out of the reeking pit by himself, died of thirst within days. Since then, his corpse has animated into an undead that is now trapped in the shitter beneath you. As you've lunged your way off, you look back to see its hands reaching up, where just barely its fingertips crest the edge of the toilet seat.
Oh, is there a lid? I close the lid.
There is no lid.
Oh. All right, I pull up my britches and I close the door. I guess I pull out my arcane firearm and then I want to open the door to the other one.
You open the door to the other latrine, and this latrine seems fine.
So that death and decay smell was below me then. Okay.
Yeah. This latrine seems fine, and your business is done in here without issue.
Okay, yeah, I finish up. Same thing here. I want to see if there's, you know, just reading material or if anyone scrawled anything on the inside.
It's much of the same, but there's no there's no Iron Testament here.
Okay, I take the Iron Testament book with me, and I connect with the party.
As you step out of the latrine, though, you actually hear footfalls in the jungle on your left. Your head turns that direction, and you find yourself eye to eye with a man stepping around a tree. He has the look of a man who hasn't showered in several days and has been out here in the jungle. He looks sweaty and sweat-stained, but otherwise he looks like his clothes are well put together. He's clearly in his 50s, and he stops his eyes wide, or his bespectacled eyes wide at the sudden sight of you emerging from the latrine. He's already reaching for a cutlass at his side when he suddenly notices you're not a corpse, and in fact says, "You're not a corpse?"
No, I'm not, but there's one in the left stall. The right one's fine, though.
He says, "Of course, that's why I haven't been using... Those latrines are supposed to be off limits."
Excuse
and you
me?
Notice, you notice that this man returning from the jungle has a stack of paper under his arms as well.
Is that better to wipe with, or what do you got there? Hey, for a second,
he looks down at it and, well... Yes, but who are you?
Okay, I'm going to put my pistol away. Can you just keep your hand off your sword for a second?
He immediately draws his hand and says, of course, sorry, you see there's a corpse right in one of those, and I suddenly seeing a man walking out of the... Again, who are you? Where did you come from?
I'm Danny Ocean. Let me speak.
I'm Danny Ocean.
Speak candidly. I'm not really the talker around here. Is this your camp? Are you camped here?
He kind of recollecting himself. Clearly, the jarring nature of seeing what he thought was a zombie stumbling out of a toilet. He kind of collects himself and says, "My apologies." And he does like a short bow and says, "Darwin Nash, famous explorer, charter and navigator at your service. Paramount researcher of the ancient ones. And this is my camp, such as a camp without any camp helpers could be."
Okay. Hey, let's, you know, I don't mean you any harm. I actually have one of my colleagues is aware of you. Let's walk back. I think they have some questions for you or some.
All right, Danny, lead the way. He returns back with you and starts heading towards his command tent. Robert, you hear footfalls coming and voices talking. Are you still in the command tent flipping through these journals, or do you sneak out of it so you're not found in the act?
As I hear the footsteps, I'll like pull my sword out of its sheath a little bit. Is it glowing?
That is a very interesting question. Does the Sword of Warning act as a guaranteed success on, like, a magical insight?
Just warns of danger.
So shouldn't it always be glowing because you need food? The sword is not glowing.
Okay. I'll resheath it, and then I'll just like, oh, is there like a chair in here? Maybe like a glass of brandy so I can look confident as they come in.
You see, there is wine and or the decanter of wine, and there is a chair.
Okay, yeah, I'll pull up the chair really quick to the center of the room, pour myself a glass of the wine, and like sit cross legged, sword like hand on my sword.
All right, as they're walking towards there, Jules and Zelnern, you're kind of somewhat in the, or I guess you overhear that you overhear Phil talking to somebody, but this is just, or this is while Jules is mid, what's the word? Ritual to detect magic. Meanwhile, Celeste, you've let that axe beak out, and you see this commotion going on over the tent, so you reasonably come on over. So Jules and Zelnern, you're still at the base, or just inside the statue, working this spell, while Celeste, you catch up to Phil as he walks Darwin Nash towards the command tent. Darwin Nash seeing, or sorry, as you walk it up, you're headed your way over there as Phil walks Darwin Nash back to the tents. Darwin Nash steps into the command tent with Phil at his side to find Robert Greysand seated in his chair drinking his wine.
Darwin Nash, I presume. I've been expecting you.
Who are you people? And then he sees that bottle and he says, and you see there's a clear frustration on his face, and immediately says, that bottle was to be saved for when the dig is complete.
It's a fine vintage, I must say.
That's why it's to be saved.
Oh, my apologies, but you can't let a good vintage like this go to waste.
He looks a little taken aback by that and says, is that a threat?
No, of course. I would never presume to threaten you. I am Robert Greysand.
Are you presenting yourself as friendly, or are you trying to be intimidating to this person?
I guess friendly.
Because the circumstances so far feels very threatening.
Yeah, Robert doesn't really know the difference. So, like, he's trying to be friendly, but he's coming off as intimidating.
Alright, Darwin Nash looks a little uncomfortable in this space. Says, seriously, who are you people?
I am Robert Greysand. I see you've already met...
Danny Ocean.
Yes, you've met my associate.
I have Danny. Met Danny Ocean, yes, and, you said Robert?
Yes, Robert Greysand. Captain of the Maloras Borealis.
Maloras Borealis. You're the ship that, you're that crew in service to... You're one of Prime Water's mercantile ships, aren't you? Yes. You explored the Sunless Citadel.
That is correct.
He kind of muses and says, I myself once delved into the Sunless Citadel, though, found it quite lacking. Did you get behind the snake door?
Oh yes, our efforts were very fruitful.
You didn't get behind the snake door.
I know.
Deception check on. I guess very fruitful. Okay. He nods and he says, "You are seeking the panacea. You know what it actually is, right?"
Yeah. Makes vampires or something.
Yes, there's a reason I refused that job when Prime Water asked me to do it.
Of course. Only a fool would have given such succulent fruit away.
Not only that, but Prime Water means to spread its seeds far and wide to find a way to make it grow. He means to do the work of the drowned fleet.
Yes, but... You would have to understand the properties in which to do that. I mean, only the ancient ones know such secrets.
He shakes his head and he says, the secrets of the ancient ones aren't as secret as they used to be. The goblins might have destroyed most, but if you look hard enough at any ancient one's site, you can find a little bit of what they used to know, a little bit of their old science.
Wait, how do you know so much about us?
You open the door, or you're standing at the tent. He turns and says,
"Yeah, he didn't even notice another, me. I want
to another
that
one
out.
To your party."
I've been here the whole time.
All I know is what the stories I've heard come down from Port Providence about the Maloras Borealis of Rubert's Graysan.
Yes.
I only hear vague words, stories told. But
all
I make
of them
it
good,
my.
I hope.
Well, so far all I've heard is good pirate hunters and explorers with it with a respect for the ancient ones.
Yes. That is all correct.
Though I will say pirate hunting is something I appreciate out on these seas. It is a bit too much of a dangerous body trade for my taste. A little too barbaric to go out hunting men. Kind of shudders and says, discovery, wonder, exploration. That's the game of Darwin Nash. Not bounty hunting, as such as it is.
Well, I think we do have some interests that would see eye to eye.
I'd imagine so, as you found yourself here at Camp Righteous. Are you here on behalf of the Commandant at Camp Vengeance?
He gave us an idea of the situation, but we do not adhere to his rule. But the situation piqued our interest, and we thought that it was worth exploring and maybe providing some help to those that need it.
Well, he nods and he says, well, I appreciate that greatly. He points off towards the statue and says, you see, I'm in need of help from someone, at least one person, to be able to delve deeper into this house of the man and the crocodile. I believe at the end there is a relic, an ancient a relic of the ancient ones, that on it, if what I've heard and the rumors I've gathered is true, this relic should contain a bit of lithography that will allow me to translate the ciphers in their code, or help as a key to the ciphers in their codes. Darwin Nash explains that he believes that within the temple is an old relic of the ancient ones with lithography on it that can give him basically the cipher key to decode other information he has from the ancient ones and bring him a step closer to finding the gateway to the Forbidden City, as he calls it. But as he explains that, he says, but my whole crew is a bunch of foolish, superstitious cowards that refused to delve into the house of the man and crocodile. But maybe you all will be willing to help me out better than them. At this point, my only other idea was to capture a young axe beak that I've locked up in a pen there, and I was going to use it as a canary in the coal mine to sort of suss out where traps might be.
Is that why you want our help? To just poke around and set off traps for you?
No, if that's what the axe beak is for. But what I need you for is overcoming these traps. It's what I needed my crew for. Celeste, do you share that you've let the axe beak go?
No, because he hasn't asked for my name yet.
He turns back towards you and says, and by the way, what's your name?
Oh, it's so nice that you asked. I'm Celeste. Nice to meet you, Mr. Nash.
He nods and says, you have a look about you. Are your family islanders? Are your ancestors originally from these lands?
Yes.
I could tell there was a hint of elvish in you.
That is true. My grandma's elvish.
And those markings on you, those tattoos, those are... I've seen similar on detailed in various statues and not. He seems to then, like, as he talks to you, he seems to then know about the your family, not your family specifically. He's not like, hey, this specific family member of yours, but seems to know about the basically ancestry you have and has heard about that. And as he talks about it, it is from an anthropologist talking to a subject of study perspective, but he does seem informed of it and culturally appreciative.
I see you're familiar with the Circle of the Stars.
Indeed. Deep connections to the Ancient Ones. If you are studying the Ancient Ones, you have to study all of the peoples they subjugated.
That is true, I guess.
Well, Captain Rubert, was it?
Yes.
Is this your whole crew?
No, there are two others.
At this point, Jules, your magic finishes and you sense powerful magic emanating from within this tomb. The whole of it seems to radiate, to pulse as if constantly aware, as if checking, as if basically there seems to be abjuration magic emanating from everything in this building. Like the very house of Man and Crocodile itself is magical.
I think Jules like basically falls back and like onto the ground from the overwhelming sensation of all this magic.
Jules, be careful, watch where you're going.
Says Zelnern, this place is heavy. I'm so glad we didn't go in there. I can't even tell. It's so overwhelming. There's so many things I can't even tell what's what. The whole thing is just a big ball of some kind of protective magic.
Is it good magic or bad magic?
All you could tell was it was abjuration magic. An inspiration for your level of awe. and as you explain this to Zelnern, at this point, Darwin, Nash, Phil, Rubert, and Celeste have been exiting the command tent to join you there, and Darwin remarks, well, of course it's full of magic. This was a temple built by the more barbarous peoples of these islands that the subjects of the Ancient Ones. They believed, and he points to the statue, they believed that by carrying the Ancient Ones, or Crocodile, as symbolized here, across the waves, they would one day be rewarded. Although, as we all know this tale, and he points to it and explains that very same tale, as we all know that tale, they were themselves tricked and oppressed like this. They have shut away the magical gifts given to them by the Ancient Ones and built this temple both out of reverence and out of abhorrence. It is both devotion and repulsion. And it's up to us to delve inside, bypass all of the secret wards they've created, and steal away that treasure they sought to hide. In the name of discovery.
You want to take their relics? They're like sacred relics?
Yes.
In the name of discovery?
In the name of discovery and expedition.
What does that do for you or anyone?
He looks at you as if you've just asked, why does a man breathe? And
why
says,
does a man breathe? When
there is no purpose to life but to uncover. Science is the pure driver of existence. Science with a good conscience is all that matters in this world. When we discover, we give life to these people who once were. Otherwise, they sit here forgotten. But when we go in there and we find this Ancient One relic, with it we can uncover all of the experiences, the passionate work of these old ancient peoples, these forgotten peoples. And we can use that relic to find even more wonders, to find the Forbidden City. And he says that with a marvel in his eyes.
You know, I too believe that wonders could be uncovered. Just this morning, when I was looking at the stars, Melora showed me how the Evoker was coming to the horizon, which I feel like brings good wheel to us.
He rolls his eyes and says, "Fortune telling and divination is poppycock. The future is for us to take in our own hands. Ugh, you remind me of my, dismissing you with a hand wave, says, "Ugh, you remind me of my pupil, caring so much for these divinations."
Well, it's kind of funny for you to say, because isn't there a bunch of magic in here that you have to worry about?
There is indeed magic, but we need to simply overcome it.
Can't you just, like, dispel magic with your science?
He looks at you.
Like, dispel magic. That's, like, a thing we can do.
I am not myself a spellcaster, but I can tell you that it would take quite a powerful spellcaster to suppress any magic present here. I can tell you that for certain. I believe on a Mordenkainen scale, or a Vancian method, they assign this to 9th level magic.
Oh, that's high, is it, right? I look to Jules and Celeste.
It felt high. I don't know what that means, but it was big.
Big magic.
What are you asking, Celeste?
Oh, I was asking Jules if they felt high.
Yeah, I'm extremely high right now.
Yeah, magic does that, man. I get it.
Darwin Nash returns your attention back to the temple there and says, "So we'll simply grab the axe beak and have it enter first. It will trigger traps, and then we will figure out how to say, where'd the axe beak go?" Do any of you know where that axe beak went?
What is an axe beak?
Axe beak. Is this some kind of tool?
It is a very common sharp bird.
Was that what was in the outhouse? No.
No, that was a zombie man.
Oh.
There's Celeste. A zombie man in the outhouse?
Celeste, I need you to deception check.
Zombie man in the outhouse?
I got a 13.
Celeste, as he's asking, does anyone know where the axe beak went? His eyes then fall on the druid in the group. Of course.
Why do you assume it's me?
You let the axe beak out, didn't you?
Why are you looking straight at me?
Celeste, you clearly let it go.
We then do not have an axe beak. Let's let bygones be bygones and find instead our way to solve this little problem.
We do have a Zelnern.
Yeah, I could be an axe beak too.
I have a sharp shell, but we can go through, but we're going to be go at my speed if I'm going to lead, okay?
You know, we also have a zombie man.
That's a brilliant idea. If you could dredge the zombie man out, I'm not comfortable with sending one man simply ahead to poke around to find traps. This magic is surely powerful, and I fear it could kill you without us having any chance to help you, or worse. Now, the zombie man, if he was able to get in, though I have reason to believe this place has been forbidden-st, meaning that no undead, fey, fiends, celestials, or elementals can step foot within it.
Did that mention undead?
I believe so, but I also felt like I meant left one out. Fae, fiends, undead, celestials, or elementals from entering.
I mean, we can at least give it a shot. Mm-hmm.
The downside to that shot is we have a zombie coated in foul, diseased excrement running around trying to attack us.
Oh, I can wash him off.
I got an idea. Can I actually take the time to do magical tinkering and do like the odor one?
What does that do?
The object continuously emits your choice of an odor or sound. The chosen phenomenon is perceivable from 10 feet away. I'm going to work on this so it doesn't smell like shit when we put him in there.
Do you magically create a bottle of Febreze?
No, it's gonna smell like what is it called? Tobacco Vanier or whatever, the Tom Ford. It's like a really Phil starts to smell like really nice cologne.
While I appreciate the scent, says Nash, I fear it won't be enough. This thing has been sitting in diseased excrement for months. By now, the rot and filth has suffused its skin. Even washing it off would do nothing. Hiding yourself from the smell is the least of your concerns. I fear to be even scratched by the nails of that corpse would be enough to end a man's life. Like the bite of the Jalarin dragon, simply being nicked by it will ensure your death within days. So Nash seems to be against or afraid of the idea of getting a diseased zombie out to wander amongst. But it is still an option.
Hey, I'll be right back. I go outside and I take my pants off and I look at my legs and see if I got scars or anything.
You did not get scratched. You're all right.
Okay.
Nash then says, and besides, while the axe beak was to be a helpful measure, it has been my experience that the peoples of these islands always built these shrines and temples to the ancient ones with a way to circumvent, a way to allow their own people to pass through. Such as, essentially, if you're in the know, then you need not fear. I'm sure there's some way to get past these traps without disabling them. We just need to figure out what about the man and the the house of the man and the crocodile we need to know to get through these traps.
I wonder if the fable of the man and the crocodile has some hint.
It could be.
I figured it out.
Yeah, I figured it out too. Celeste is going to carry us all, one at a time.
Yeah.
What's up, Chaotic Normies? It's me, your friend Ryan, who plays your favorite bard, Rubert Graysand, on Chaotic Normal, The Shattered Isles. Thanks for listening once again. Be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. Recommend to your friends. Put it on your social media, what you're listening to, your favorite moments. Send those. You can send all those clips and likes and any questions, concerns, comments, and your favorite homemade cat food recipe. Send those over to chaoticnormalpod@gmail.com. And no new announcements this week. Still going to keep chugging along on the bi-weekly schedule for now. You know, people on vacations. Unofficial start of summer after Memorial Day. Hope y'all had a good long weekend. And yeah, we're gonna keep this up for a while, but if anything changes, I'll be sure to update you. So I'll talk to y'all in a couple weeks. So until then, bye bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.